In the fifth reading, Yaakov Avinu continues to bless his children. And here, after having heard about Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun, we heard about Dan, and now we move on to God. God is a troop. Naphtali is a gazelle, a deer. Yosef is an ox. At the beginning of the sixth reading, Binyamin is a wolf. And the obvious question is, really? Of all things, a wolf? But not just any wolf. Binyamin ze'ev yitref. Binyamin is a praying wolf with an E. So you talk about the majestic lion, and you talk about the beautiful ox, the powerful ox. You talk about the diligent donkey, a wolf. That's what the Torah says. Yaakov Avinu said, Binyamin ze'ev yitev. Binyamin is a praying wolf. Ba'boicher, in the morning, yechal ad, he grabs or eats in the morning. Ula erev yichalak shalal. And towards evening, he is dividing the spoils. So what in heaven does this mean? Why would you say Binyamin ze'ev yitref? How is it a compliment? Why is it a good thing to pray or grab like a wolf? So let's go through Rashi. First and foremost, we'll see what some of the other Mefarshim say. And then we will take a look into the Rebbe's writings to see how this can inspire us. Binyamin ze'ev yitref. So it does not mean, first of all, that Binyamin prays or tears the wolf. The word yitref literally means tears. So it doesn't mean Binyamin tears a wolf. No. Binyamin ze'ev hu. He is a wolf. He is a wolf? Oh yeah, Rashi says. He is a wolf asher yitrof. He is a wolf who prays or tears. Now we're talking here about the animal, the wolf, tearing his prey. Says Rashi, here Yaakov speaks futuristically. Niba al shahoyu asidim lihiyeis chatfonim. Yaakov here speaks about the history of the future. And he says that in a distant time from now, Binyamin's descendants will grab, like they'll prey, as a wolf grabs his prey. And we see this in a very, very unfortunate narrative, which is known proverbially as Pelegesh Begiva, the concubine at Giva. So there was these terrible people from the tribe of Binyamin who killed a woman. And the other tribes of Israel rose up against them. And at some point, not only did they declare civil war on them, not only did they kill some members of Binyamin, but they made this edict. Nobody would marry into the tribe of Binyamin. They excommunicated the tribe. And as it were, there were many males born to Binyamin and not many females born to Binyamin. And this was a real problem. This was a real problem because there was not going to be a next generation of Binyamin. And we're dealing here with the extinction of a tribe of Israel. People worry today about the extinction of one animal or the other. This was a question of the extinction of an entire tribe. So, but they made their ancestors had made an oath. And they couldn't violate the oath. So they indicated to Binyamin, don't ask questions. In those days it was typical, you wanted to get married, you came and you spoke to the parents, you asked for the hand in marriage. You know, there was certain ways you comported yourself. He said, Binyamin, do what you have to do. Just grab your prey, so to speak. Not chas v'sholom to harm or to force woman, God forbid, that's against the Torah. But there was no, they didn't go through the etiquette of speaking to parents and going through a shidduch and emotions. Binyamin, I guess you would call it in English, they just eloped. Obviously, according to Torah, obviously there was a chuppah and kiddushin and all that stuff, but it didn't follow what you would call the typical etiquette or the normative situation in which you would have people get married. And because that was the only way for Binyamin to overcome this conflict, So the other tribes basically allowed Binyamin to, quote-unquote, grab women for themselves. Yaakov sees this as a virtue. And that's when he speaks, about the history of the future, he says, Binyamin is Ze'ev Yitev, he's a praying wolf, he's a wolf who grabs. He's speaking about Binyamin's overcoming the moral issue of the concubine at Giva, and that this is what Binyamin did in order to ensure that Binyamin would survive, and that's a virtue. And if you're not scratching your head yet, you should be. V'ni Baal Shaul. And he also here speaks about a future in which Shaul HaMelech, who is the descendant of Binyamin, sheyiyeh neitzeach be'oivav saviv, he is going to be victorious over his enemies, so to speak, around and around, in an entire area around him. Shaul HaMelech would be the one who would fearlessly vanquish the enemies of Israel. Shenemar, as it's written in the book of Shmuel, this is in Samuel 1, verse 14, chapter 14, verse 47. V'shol lochad hamlucha, Shaul HaMelech established or conquered the kingdom. V'yilochim saviv, and he battled the enemies who were around, b'moyav, u'be'edom, v'goymer. U'bechol asher yifna, yashia. Everywhere he turned, he spoiled the reality of the enemies. So usually we say the word Rasha, wicked, is for somebody who does something bad, somebody who violates the Torah. Here it's B'chol Asher Yifna, wherever he turns, Yashia, he makes bad, but he made it bad for the enemies of Israel. Okay, so far we have a praying wolf. Why is he a praying wolf? Because he didn't follow normal etiquette when it came to getting married. They grabbed their wives. And because Shaul was a wild man, a warrior, who attacked at random, he didn't follow, the conventions of the day. And because he behaved in an unconventional fashion, and because he established the kingdom of Israel in an unconventional fashion, and because the wolf preys unconventionally, or seizing the moment, so that's why Binyamin's Ze'ev Yitev. Rashi now addresses the second part of the pasuk, Ba'boiker Yoichel Ad. Here we start getting into the grabbing wolf. Now we talk about the methodology that in the morning he devours his plunder, and then it says in the evening he distributes the spoil. So what does this mean? So Rashi says Yoichel Ad, that Ad is a lashon biza v'shalol. It comes from the syntax, the language of spoils. It's miturgam, it's translated into Aramaic as Adda'a. So we have the story of the Battle of Midian with Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people. And when that battle unfolds, it says, Vayikro es kol ha-sholol. They took all the spoils. There's a whole story with the spoils. So the Targum Onkelos renders the word sholol over there. He says that means shavu yos kal ada'a. So ada'a is the idea of spoil then. And here it says ad. So there seems to be a relationship between the word ad and between the word ada'a. And as discussed many times, the language of Hebrew was not a spoken language for Jewish people purposefully, because spoken languages change. So they were speaking in Aramaic or permutations of it. And a lot of times there's a word in Hebrew that will show up once in the entire Chumash. And because it wasn't a word that people spoke often, you looked at Semitic languages from the Middle East, and you could see words as they developed, and you could do a little bit of etymology and figure out what a word might mean. So here it says, "Ba'beker yechal ad." To the best of my knowledge, this doesn't show up elsewhere, to the best of my recollection. And because this word doesn't show up elsewhere, Rashi says, what does the word mean? What does it mean to eat ad? And he says, eat ad, this is ad, this is ad, oh, it spoils. So Shaul HaMelech divided the spoils. And what does this mean? Al-Shaul HaMelech, he's speaking about Shaul. Before we go further, Rashi says, Yesh le'doyme b'loshen ivris, there's something similar in Hebrew. It says, Oz chulak ad Shaul. In the prophecies of Isaiah, it says they were distributed ad Shaul. So there it actually says the word spoils. But in an adjunct to the word spoil, it says ad. And for there, it literally means they divided up like until or all of the spoils. But okay, so since it's in conjunction with the word spoil, so it kind of has like, there's a relationship between the two words, and even though it doesn't speak of it ad on its own, that word appears only in conjunction with another word, nonetheless, we can also, once you have the Targum Onkelos rendering it ad-da'a, you can use that word to extrapolate that it means or is related to the concept of spoils. What does this mean? He plunders spoils. Wow, what a wonderful, beautiful, pious thing to do. So he says, no, this is Shaul. Al Shaul hu Omer. This refers to Shaul. Sha'amad betchilas bakron. That he rose up in the early morning, so to speak, in the beginning of the Jewish people's zrichasan, when the sun of Israel was just rising, the beginning of our kingdom, our nation was still what you would call a nascent nation, a rising nation, a developing nation, and there was Shaul dividing up the spoil. Okay, so if he plunders the spoil in the morning, so what is the emphasis or meaning of La'orev Yachalek Shaul, that in the evening he distributes the spoils? So this, Rashi says, refers to a much later and very different time for the Jewish people, a time that is metaphorized as dark or evening a dusk. Af mishetishka shimshon shel Yisrael. Even though when the sun set on the Israelite empire. When did the sun set on the Jews? When the Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. Nearly 9.5 centuries after we came into the land of Israel, after we had this very, very layered national experience where we had risen and developed, and then unfortunately the sun sank on us. And that was through Nebuchadnezzar, who essentially exiled all of the Jewish people from Israel in a staged fashion, but eventually almost everybody was exiled. And they were exiled to Babel. And even then, Yechalak Shaul, even though the spoils are being distributed, this refers to Mordechai and Esther, with Shehem and Bibin Yamin, and Yechalku with Shlal Haman, they divided the spoils of Haman. Shenemar, as it says in the 8th chapter of the Megillah, that says, with regard to the victory over Haman and his ilk, it says, Hine beis Haman nasati l'Esther. Achashverosh says, the home of Haman I have given over to Esther. Imagine taking the mansion of Hitler or Eichmann, and it becomes instead a kollel, a yeshiva, a Jewish nursery school or something like that. Well, that's what happened. But Onkelos Tirgum, Onkelos interprets this entire business on the Beis HaMikdash. That the Beis HaMikdash will be at least partially in a portion of Binyamin. At least they say the Mizbeach is like a peninsula that juts out from the area of Binyamin. And it refers to Shalal HaKoyanim B'Kodshi HaMizbeach. That this refers to the spoils of the Koyanim who will take the offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Koyanim will grab like a wolf. It's like, what does this mean? How is this complimentary? A grabbing wolf? It's interesting that I don't know anybody named Chamor, but I do know people named Zev. I have a son named Zev. And many people have the name Ze'ev Wolf in Yiddish even. Not only we love this name so much in Hebrew, we even translate it into Yiddish. And some people have a name only Velvel, a little wolf. Well, that makes it better if he's a little wolf. What is this? What is Yaakov saying? All we heard so far is about people who married unconventionally. A warrior king who battled unconventionally. A time of darkness, and the Jewish people still unconventionally took the house of Arafat, of Hitler, and turned it around and used it for something holy. And the business of the Beis HaMikdash became a praying wolf now. The Kohenim are grabbing food. What does this mean? How is this supposed to be a compliment? How is it a blessing for Binyamin? And what can we learn from this? So, the Ibn Ezra says that the emphasis here is that the wolf is strong. He's strong, and he's strident, and he takes very, very strong affirmative actions. Okay, I mean, I could think of different ways to describe strength. The lion is strong, the ox is strong. Was it that Binyamin got called the wolf because there was no other animals left over because they used up? Because the ox and the lion were already used? The Rabbeinu Bechaya says that there's a medrash that says Binyamin Ze'ev Yitrif. Binyamin, we know, had 10 children, and actually he lists the names of his children to Yosef. And the word Ze'ev has a gematria of 10. because Zion is 7, Aleph is 1, and Beis is 2, and that gives you 10, so you have 10 children. All right, fine. Al derech ha-medrash, he had 10 children, so therefore he's a wolf. Yeah, I didn't really get that. And the Sif Sikarim says, Binyamin ze'ev yitreif, if you count each word as we add 1, so that's an added 3, you get the gematria, ze haya Shaul ha-melech. That's what Shaul ha-melech, says the Sif Sikarim, great. So now, if in case you think it's strange that Binyamin is a wolf, Shaul ha-melech, he's a wolf too. And Rashi, of course, speaks about Shaul being a wolf. So if you want to say he's a mighty warrior, there are a number of tribes who are spoken of in warlike fashion, or the valor of the battlefield, and none of them ended up being a praying wolf. It's almost like a jackal. Now, he's not called a dog, but still. The Sefarno also says about Tokfei Shel Ze'ev, the strength of the Ze'ev. The Rechaim says it's about alacrity, it's about speed. He says, Shaul, he behaved with mehirus, with tremendous, tremendous speed. And he was quick, didn't wait in order to carry out his intentions when it came to the destruction of Amalek or other things like that. Okay, so let's take a look. The Rebbe introduced us to a very unusual medrash. In addition to Binyamin being metaphorized as a wolf, and Mordechai and Esther being cast in the image of a wolf, the medrash goes even further. Not only the Kohanim who eat from the Mizbeach are considered to be like wolves who grab from the Mizbeach, which I don't think would be a compliment if I wasn't saying this in the context of Chumash. If I said to you, how was dinner? And you would say, I grabbed like a wolf. And I'd say, really? Yeah, it's great. That would sound a little bit, shall we say, unmannerly. So the Medrash goes so far even as to say the Mizbeach itself is a wolf. The Mizbeach itself, page Shin Nun Beis. Ma ha-ze'ev ha-zeh choytev, says the Bereishis Rabba in Perek Tzadik Tes. Just like a wolf grabs, in English we call that praise with an E, but still, he grabs. Ka choye Mizbeach choytev ha-sakarbonus. The Mizbeach would grab the offerings. In the morning, it would devour its plunder, its spoils. This is its akeves achota seva baker. That refers to the morning offering. When the pasuk speaks about evening, dividing up the spoils, this is akeves hasheni tasa bein arboyim. This is the yearling offering that's brought each afternoon. I mean, yeah, I get it. The mizbeach, there was an offering in the morning, an offering in the afternoon. I understand that. How did Mizbeach become a grabber? Mizbeach, to the best of my knowledge, was inanimate. It was this large platform. The Kohanim would go and they would bring an offering. How did Mizbeach become a grabber? Choytev is a karbonus? A grabbing Mizbeach? The Mizbeach reaches out and grabs, seizes, prays. What does this mean? A pasuk says, as a keves achodes have a baker. God said you should bring a yearling sheep in the morning. Okay, fine. You ask a child if that thing sounds like a wolf to him. What, because wolves grab lambs? It's a keves taseh ben arboim. You, the Kohanim, should prepare or make or bring an offering, a korban, of a lamb in the evening. Therefore, that's le'erev yechalek, that's dividing spoils. So, b'keshul ha'shva azu ben ha'mizbeach, with regard to this juxtaposition of this comparison between the mizbeach, between the altar of the Beis HaMikdash, and which was in Chelke Shel Binyamin, in the territory of Binyamin, as I mentioned to you, there was a peninsula jutting out from the territory of Binyamin upon which the mizbeach was built, kind of crossing or crisscrossing the Temple Mount. Lebein hazeev, between the wolf, Mitzayin Admura Tzemach Tzedek, the Rebbe de Tzemach Tzedek writes or notes that there's a link and a connection between Divrei HaMechilta, the words of the Mechilta, on the Pasuk, Zocher Es Yem HaShabbos Lekatre. So you come along and say the Mizbeach is a wolf, and the Tzemach Tzedek says, ah, this is about making Kiddush on Shabbos. How so? Zocher milafanov, vishomer milachrov. We remember, we bring Shabbos to memory, we verbalize in a remembrance of Shabbos, which is the mitzvah of Kiddush, or mekadesh, we sanctify the Shabbos day, milafanov, before the Shabbos arrives. And there's a positive mitzvah in the Torah called Tosfos Shabbos, adding to Shabbos. And even if a Jew were to keep Shabbos exactly when he's supposed to keep Shabbos, and he doesn't violate Shabbos from the moment of sundown, but if he didn't stop doing his work and welcome the Shabbos early, he violates a positive mitzvah called Tosfos Shabbos, adding to the Shabbos. And Shomer Melacharov, you look at the calendar, you'll see when there's nightfall, and you see when Shabbos goes out, and they're not the same time. Shabbos goes out later than nightfall. So we add on. We grab in the beginning, we take the mundane week and turn it into Shabbos, and then have a spillover of Shabbos at the end. Mikan Omru. From here we say, Maisifin Michoil al HaKodesh. We're supposed to add from Choil, from a mundane time, onto a holy time. And listen to this. Moshul Lezeev. This could be understood in the image or parable of the metaphor of the Ze'ev, the wolf. Because the Ze'ev is an unconventional prayer. When he rips, when he plunders from before and after. According to what we just said, that not only is Shaul HaMelech, and not only Pelegish Begiva, unconventional marriages, and not only the concept of Mordechai and Esther, but even Kohanim. And now we're adding to this that the Mizbeach itself, the altar itself, is also metaphorized as the wolf. Yeshleimer, we could say, Shateich Nezu Shel Heisafa Mechel Ola Kodesh, that this notion that the Mizbeach, of adding from the mundane, from the ordinary, reaching beyond the lines of convention, like the Mashal Azev, the metaphor, the parable of the Zev. Shayatoidav Milfanov. He grabs, so to speak, from the lines of scrimmage before. Yeshna Afhi B'Mizbech. We have this in the Mizbech. The Rebbe says, where do you see that in the Mizbech? Ba'if and Klali, as a rule, generally speaking, Zmana Shal Avodas HaKarbonos, the time of offerings. Offerings comes from the word Kiruv in Hebrew. Not sacrifice, that's a Greek word. But korban comes as a permutation of the word kiruv, of closeness. So when is a time of korban? When is a time of closeness to Hashem? That's by yom, by day. By day is a time of closeness to Hashem. Kifi shalomdu chazal me'akosov, like chazal learned from the pasuk, it says, b'yom tzavoysai, on the day of being commanded. The day represents light, the day represents clarity, the day represents openness. This is when we have an open relationship with God. The nights are a time of fear and terror, nights are a time of darkness and confusion. That's ve'emunoscha, that's when you need, it says, your faith, by laila, by night. As you all know, Elie Wiesel's first book was called Night. Afal Pikein, despite the fact that serving Hashem in this very profound and meaningful and with closeness, even so, Matzinu Shtei Avedis, there are two different details in the service of the Beis HaMikdash, Shemeskaimos Michutz L'Shores HaYom, which are fulfilled outside of the daytime, of the hours of the day. Achas Koidim Oir HaYom, one is before day breaks, and that's known as Trumas HaDeshen, where a small bit of ashes is taken off the altar, and a Koyan has to do this in a special way. The Achas Balayla, and once at night, and this is the notion of Hekter Chalavim Ve'ivarim, of burning that which the sacrificial material, the Korba material, which wasn't burnt during the day, Zmana, the time of doing that, is Kol HaLayla, all night long. V'nimtza, comes out Sha'afa Mizbeach Torif Milafanov Al-Akhrav. The Mizbeach also, if you will, behaves in a non-conventional fashion, meaning it doesn't stick to its lines of scrimmage. It's not limited to its particular frame, but reaches beyond. Al-Af Shazman Avedis HaKarbonos Hu Bayoyim. Although anything which is Beis HaMikdash related, Karbon related, necessarily is linked to day or daytime hours. Now the Mizbeach, HaMizbeach Moisif, nonetheless the Mizbeach adds, V'chotev, it grabs, it prays, Gam Bezman Sh'neshayach La'Avodasei, even to a time which isn't intrinsically linked to the kind of Avodah, the kind of service that's represented by the concept of Korbanos. So what really does this mean? What's the upshot of what we hear from here? What we're hearing here is that there's a conventional way of serving Hashem. There's following the rules, there's coloring in the lines, and then there's reaching outside the lines. There's an unconventional, seizing the moment. My dear friends, to pray like a wolf means to seize the moment, to strike when the iron is hot. There are many people who speak about being Orthodox. I always tell people, you can't really be Orthodox, because Orthodox means perfect. And I never met the perfect person yet. We all make mistakes. We could aspire to perfection. We could aspire to Orthodoxy. The notion that there's a label for a person who's perfect, we don't have it. They don't have it. In Torah Judaism, there is no such label. But there is a label of a chassid. What is a chassid? A chassid means to be pious, but the way the Gemara describes chassidus, it means lefnim mishuras hadin, to go beyond the letter of the law. We should all aspire to the letter of the law. We all fall short of the letter of the law, but we aspire to the letter of the law. That's the label we aspire for. But the chassid is a person who on a regular basis goes beyond the call of duty, reaches beyond the lines. It doesn't chas v'shalom mean less, it means beyond. It's not a question of what I'm obligated to do, it's a question of what might I be able to do. I'll finish with a little story. There's a family, a Lubavitch family from Montreal, the name is Ruddle. And they live, there are many shluchim living all over the world to name with the name Ruddle. And the Ruddle family was not a Lubavitch family. They owned a bookstore. The big bookstore, Hebrew bookstore in Montreal, was known as Ruddle's. And Mr. Ruddle, who was the proprietor of this bookstore, yes, Nathan? Ruddle's bookstore? Rodel? Oh, you call it Rodel, sorry. I have a French twist to it. So you just call him Ruddle. So he asked Mr. Ruddle, how did you come close to Lubavitch? Why did you end up sending your children to Lubavitch? And he said like this. He said, I have the Hebrew bookstore, and people come in all the time. They want to buy Tashmish Kedusha. They want to buy tefillin, mezuzahs, and the like. So he says, what happens usually when people come into a store, especially a Yiddish store? What's the first thing you do?
Bargaining.
They bargain, they haggle. So how much is it? It's $10, $20. You have anything cheaper? He said, some people would come in and say, I have a mezuzah, tefillin, yeah? Then he said, you have anything more expensive? It's only certain people would ask. It always, whenever it came to something holy, they wanted to go beyond, wanted more. And he said, I started paying attention. Who are these people? And I noticed that by and large, this was the Lubavitchers. And he said, that inspired me. I said, if these are people who want to spend more, not less, to buy tefillin and mezuzahs, that's how I want my children to go to yeshiva, and that's how a family became chassidim. That, my dear friends, is the gift of Binyamin, Ze'ev Yitreif, the praying wolf, grabbing and seizing the moments, doing things unconventionally, as they did in Pelegesh Begiva, and that is how Shaul HaMelech establishes the monarchy of the Jewish people, and that is how even in the darkest of times for the Jewish people, Mordechai and Esther rise and shine, and unconventionally use the house of Haman for the holiest of purposes. And that ultimately is what the Beis HaMikdash, the gift of the Beis HaMikdash of the Kohenim and the Mizbeach, the ability to reach beyond and to experience a kind of closeness to Hashem, which is entirely unconventional.